The NBA is slowly but surely working its way back to the court. The games are set to tip off in less than a month in Orlando, which means it's time to get ready for wall-to-wall basketball.
It's not going to be quite the chaos of a March Madness, but you're going to have a pretty fun, steady flow of games.
That is Zach Harper. He covers the NBA for The Athletic, and he is our guest on today's show. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19, and the Return of Sports. We'll hear from Zach Harper in a moment, but first, let's get you caught up on what's happening around the world of sports. We are finally done talking about Major League Baseball's negotiations. Now we can talk about actual games. It's coming 4 months later than normal, but the season will begin with the reigning world champion Washington Nationals playing against the New York Yankees on July 23rd or 24th. The shortened 60-game season will dramatically alter the scheduling. Teams will be playing 40 games within their division and then another 20 in what Major League Baseball is calling geographic counterparts, that is, the AL East versus the NL East, and so on. In the NFL, the head of the players' union is warning his members not to work out together before training camp. D'Amore Smith, speaking with USA Today, said that workouts between players, like the kind that Tom Brady is doing with his new Buccaneers teammates, is, quote, not in the interest of player safety. Last week, the NFL canceled its Hall of Fame game, which would have been the season's first preseason game, due to concerns over the coronavirus. Since the PGA Tour returned 3 weeks ago, a total of 7 golfers have dropped out of tournaments either because they tested positive for coronavirus or someone close to them has, like a caddy. At the Travelers Championship this past week, Denny McCarthy played the opening round on Thursday, then he tested positive before Friday's round, causing not only himself to drop out, but also his playing partner, Bud Cauley. Cauley tested negative for the virus. In reaction to these developments, the PGA Tour has continued to tighten its health and safety protocols. Now to the NBA, where we know what the league's schedule is going to look like when 22 teams head to Orlando. To discuss that, we bring on Zach Harper. He covers the NBA for The Athletic. Zach, pleasure to have you on the pod. Pleasure to talk about actual sports with regards to the NBA. Break down how the league set out this schedule for us and what we can expect once things get underway.
Well, so the easy way to describe it is they just took whatever the next games were had this not been shut down, right? They eliminated the Delete Eight, those 8 teams that don't get to come play. They don't get any consolation prize. We know they're terrible. We know they have nothing to play for, so they get to stay home. So by eliminating all those games but still keeping it to where it's an even 8-game schedule for everybody, they just took those next ones on the schedule. And so you see some teams that really, like, make out really well here, like New Orleans. New Orleans has a pretty easy schedule for the most part. I mean, they have Utah and the Clippers to start out, but then after that, a very important game against Memphis, and then the Kings, the Wizards, the Spurs without LaMarcus Aldridge, Kings again, Orlando. Like, that's a pretty easy one, but you look at, like, what Memphis and Portland got. They have brutal schedules. So in a way, it's fair because it's what it would have been had things not shut down. But there are some teams that cannot be happy about this restart. But that was the kind of the process for the league. Is the best way to do this is let's just take what would have been next and we'll call that fair.
So, you know, I'm a big March Madness guy, envisioning a similar setup where you just have wall-to-wall games morning, noon, and night. Everybody's staying home from work, but we're all home from work anyway. Is that basically what it's going to look like?
I think so. I mean, you're going to have some games starting, in the morning here on the West Coast and midday on the East Coast. And I think it's going to just look like, it's not going to be quite the chaos of a March Madness. You're not going to have buzzer beater after buzzer beater or anything like that. But, you're going to have 7 games each day. Aside from that opening night where they, of course, put Zion Williamson in there, you got to get those ratings up. And Zion's going to bring the ratings for that first game back before we get to a Lakers-Clippers matchup that ultimately doesn't really mean anything because there is no home court advantage, and they're not really, the Lakers have any chance of losing that one seed unless LeBron retires tomorrow. So they're going to have a pretty fun, steady flow of games. And I guess maybe the nice part is, at least for those on the East Coast, like, you're not going to have like that real, real late game. If everything's going to start, I think 9:30 9 o'clock, 9:30 on the East Coast at the latest, which still can be a little late, but you're also going to, I think these games are going to be a little bit smoother in terms of how the timing is for them. They're going to flow a little bit better.
So let's just pay off a couple of COVID type questions, because we've seen a couple of players say they don't want to go to Orlando. They're not going to go for various reasons. Do you see that having an impact out of the gate?
I mean, you look at who's not coming out. You know, Wilson Chandler, I believe, was the latest one to say, you know, for the Nets that he's not going to go to Orlando. And, you know, Nets, because Kyrie Irving's out, because Kevin Durant's out, that's you know, he's a nice player, but that's not really going to hurt them too much. It doesn't change too much for them. Probably the biggest name so far, you know, maybe Trevor Ariza would have been a big addition for the Blazers in this situation. But Avery Bradley is kind of whatever as a player, but the one thing you know that you're going to get out of him is that defense, right? And especially when he has Dwight Howard or Anthony Davis behind him, he has LeBron kind of playing free safety a little bit on defense. Avery Bradley was really able to bother ball handlers this year and for the entire length of the floor. I know we call Patrick Beverley Mr. 94 feet, but Avery Bradley was really that guy this year he's just so good. He's so opportunistic. You make one little mistake with the dribble and he pounces on it. And not having that guy and the drop-off for then, like, okay, you can replace him with an Alex Crusoe, who's fine. Like, he's a pretty solid defender, but he's not Avery Bradley on defense. And then, or you go with Rajon Rondo, who just – Lakers fans completely lamented every time he checked into a game this year, or, you know, they bring in a J.R. Smith, or they just brought in Deion Waiters. So one of those guys, like, that's a pretty big drop off in terms of defensive intensity and defensive execution. So I would say, at least from what we know right now, Avery Bradley's the biggest missing piece, and it comes on a team that could legitimately win the championship.
As all of these players get tested to resume the season, we have seen, you know, a small flurry of positive tests. Frankly, I thought it would be maybe even worse than it's been. Is it safe to assume, Zach, that once everybody gets to Orlando, we're going to continue to see at least some positive tests, if not from players? You've got coaches, refs, and whoever. And do you feel confident, more importantly, in the league's ability to deal with that?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think we're going to see positive cases throughout this whole thing. I don't think, like, the initial returns on those 302 players, which, by the way, not everyone coming back on those 22 teams. If you just do the quick math, that should be over like 350 players. So not everyone got tested, but for those who had shown up and were on time and everything, you know, a 5% return on that for a positive test, like, that's a pretty solid number. I think the NBA was expecting a lot more. But, you know, kind of the big story that everyone's looking towards this week is, we don't know anything about the coaches and support staff from that, right? Like, we know we had some test positive, you know, in that initial shutdown when they were testing teams. But for the most part, we don't know what that's going to look like and what ramification that's going to have when these coaches and these support staff people end up, you know, testing positive and what that could mean, the implications for the team. And so that will be interesting to track. And then in terms of how the NBA deals with this, I think you can see in kind of the international soccer leagues right now, there are still rounds of testing going a couple weeks in and still positive tests showing up. Now, the bubble that the NBA has set up, Dr. Anthony Fauci has said that, you know, it's a pretty good plan. And I've talked to an epidemiologist this weekend, and she said, you know, it's a solid plan, but solid isn't foolproof, right? Solid isn't perfect. And so as the NBA deals with this, especially with Disney World workers being able to kind of come and go, and not really being locked into this bubble, I don't know how you guarantee the outright safety of these players. And so I've been convinced for months now that we're definitely going to see basketball. Even when we had the players, you know, questioning things, you know, within the last couple of weeks, I still felt it, you know, as low as 95%, but I was sure we were going to see basketball again this season. But I'm not sure we're going to see it finish out. I still have my reservations on that. I still think it's maybe a 50-50 shot on this thing finishing, because as Adam Silver said on Friday, you know, it would take a significant amount of positive tests to, you know, within that bubble to shut things down again. But what does that mean? Does that mean an entire team? Does that mean, you know, four or five teams? Does that mean just significant players? Like, I still think the NBA is kind of, you know, they have a plan in place, but this is going to be done a little bit on the fly.
All right, let's get back to the basketball then. Tell me the number one storyline you're anxious to follow when the games begin.
I guess it's, you know, at least right now, maybe this is too fresh, but because Nikola Jokic tested positive for coronavirus and because Rudy Gobert just came out and said, you know, he doesn't have his full sense of smell back, which like that was, That's an alarming thing to me. And look, you can play without smell. I guess it's not like he's sniffing out pick and rolls, right? He sees them in front of his face, and that's how you determine how you're going to, you know, play the defense and call out the, you know, the adjustments and everything. But we don't really know the ramifications for those players. We don't know what Malcolm Brogdon's going to look like. We don't know what Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert are going to look like with a respiratory illness, whether it hit them hard or not. I'm curious to see what that looks like and how they're treated within this bubble. If there will be an ostracization of sorts, if they'll be just widely accepted by their teammates. Like, we don't know quite what that stigma is going to be. And with someone like Jokic, he had the massive weight loss. If he ends up having any kind of health concerns and ramifications from this, that's a big star in this league. That's a guy who's a significant player. I don't know how that's gonna fly just in terms of the PR of it all. And so, outside of teams playing for championships with the Bucks, how they're going to return, how the Lakers and Clippers are going to return, I am really curious on the players who have tested positive what that looks like on the court.
What about the injury front? Are there any players, Zach, who before the shutdown were out and were due to come back or had just come back from an injury? Anyone of significance that could determine how teams perform in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the biggest player here is probably Victor Oladipo. You know, he had been back for a few weeks with Indiana, and he didn't look great. He looked pretty rusty, which is expected when he couldn't play for a year. He had a couple of moments here and there. He had a couple of good games towards the end right before the shutdown. But, Vic's an all-NBA level player. He's an all-star player. And if he is able to get back into being the Victor Oladipo that we've seen at his peak, that makes that Indiana team just extremely dangerous. Now, we have to see what happens with Malcolm Brogdon. But that Pacers team is kind of a team I think a lot of Eastern Conference playoff teams do not want to play in the first round because they play good defense. They're very smart. They're well-coached. They're not great offensively, but – they're good at making shots. And so this is a team that I think if they had a star power at the tip of the spear there, that's someone that could cause a lot of problems for a Miami, for a Philadelphia, for a Boston type team as everyone's still trying to work this rust off. And then outside of that, Jonathan Isaac with Orlando, it doesn't look like he's going to come back, but I guess things could change there. Some players like Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins, they were supposed to be due back towards the end of the season for Portland. Now that they've had a few extra months, do they look healthy enough to where you don't have to play Hassan Whiteside, who's a disaster, right? Like, this is both addition by addition and addition by subtraction for Portland, but their schedule and the games back that they are of Memphis, it may not be enough time to get guys into the flow as they get healthy.
It's interesting because we've had this long layoff. So on the one hand, you wonder about, these guys being relatively inactive now coming back and hurting themselves. On the other hand, for an older player like LeBron James, maybe a couple of months off to rest and recover isn't so bad. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I think you look at LeBron and it's like, that's kind of the thing that I don't think a lot of like casual fans realize is not every NBA player has a full basketball court and a full gym in their home, right? Like a lot of these guys, especially the lesser guys in the rotation, like they just live near the practice facility because that's the easiest way to get there. Once gyms were shut down everywhere in the country, there weren't a lot of players with a lot of options to, still work out all that well. I know, Cody Zeller was trying to figure out ways to, before they knew that Charlotte wasn't coming back, he was like, I guess I'll go for a run. Like that was going to be his workout, do some push-ups, do some sit-ups, go for a run. But LeBron, like we know LeBron has a great home gym. We know he has access to, to basketball courts, and he can, still have a relatively, good workout and treat it like a summer and an off season. Especially, he's 35, year 17, all those miles on his odometer, him coming back. Like, I think that's going to be a fascinating look. He already looks like he's ahead of everybody at all times. Right. But him coming back, like he may have a legitimate advantage in staying in shape during this whole thing. Whereas someone like Giannis, I don't know that Giannis has shot a basketball in 2 months leading up to the practice facility being reopened in Milwaukee. Like, we just don't know what a lot of these guys are going to look like.
What about the eight teams not going to Orlando? What are they going to do the next couple of months, next several months? I mean, there's been some chatter about setting up like a summer league type format for them. You see that happening? Any chance of that?
I think that's a bad idea. Like, I already think the 22 teams coming back isn't the best idea. I think if they were going to come back, it should have just been, look, these are unprecedented circumstances. Like, let's just throw the 16 teams. We'll get them a little bit of a warm up, and then let's just get them into the playoffs. you know, run this thing out and crown a champion and get to the next offseason as we do this as safely as possible if you have to play and save that money for the league. I think the idea of, look, I know these eight teams probably feel left out. I'm sure Trae Young's looking at this saying, hey, I want to play basketball too. Sorry, buddy. There's a global pandemic. Like, it's just not going to, it's not going to fly this time. I don't think it's a safe idea or a smart idea to let them come together. If they want to do, you know, some practice scrimmages within their own, you know, squads, go for it. Like, let them have practices, let them do that. But I don't think the idea of bringing eight teams together just so they can feel like they get to play basketball too, I think that's irresponsible. I think it's short-sighted. And I think it would be something that there's very little reward and a whole lot of risk for the NBA if they decide to do that.
So I know you cover this league as well as anyone, but of course we're all fans first, right? What do you think it's going to be like watching the playoffs without fans there? You don't have that energy. You don't have that spectacle. Is it going to be maybe not as fun, or are we going to be just so excited it's happening that it'll be all good?
Yeah, it's weird, right? It's weird to think about because I guess the closest thing I can come up with from a viewing experience is like those old Orlando summer leagues where it's just like it's a small gym and, you know, there, but even then, like, there's executives lining the, you know, executives, coaches lining the lining the sidelines and the baseline, and we're not going to have that here. And so soccer coming back, you don't really see a whole lot of shots of the crowd anyway, so you can pump in some crowd noise and make it look fine. Like, if they, you know, football comes back relatively on schedule, you don't see the crowd necessarily as the game's happening. You see the crowd with the NBA. You see the crowd with basketball. And so I don't know, like, I've a couple ideas that I've tried to come up with is, what if they each get like their play, like their own football sideline, right? Like, you know, they're always on the same sideline, but since they have to social distance and kind of spread out a little bit, let's put the Lakers on the left side of the court. Let's put the Clippers on the right side of the court. And then, you know, maybe that can fill things in a little bit. Maybe that makes it look a little bit better. You know, the guys who are in street clothes that don't get to play that are going to go sit in the stand somewhere, maybe you place them under the basket and they try to heckle during free throws or something. But yeah, I think it's going to be a bizarre experience. I think we'll get used to it by the second or third round. But then once we get into the finals, let's say that's Bucks Lakers or Bucks Clippers or Raptors Lakers, whatever that matchup ends up being, I think it's going to be a bit of an adjustment because it's just going to feel really quiet and eerie.
Quiet and eerie is a good way to explain what's happening in our world right now. Last question, Zach, how's the media coverage on this going to work? Are you going to Disney World?
No. I have zero interest in going to Disney World. I mean, I guess if it was like, hey, you have to go cover this, then I would do it. But I'm someone where I'm more concentrated on being able to see my folks the rest of this year at some point than going to Orlando and covering it. I know there are some journalists who I've talked to outside of The Athletic who have said, oh my goodness, what a great journalistic experience it's going to be to cover and write about. And to me, I look at that, and not to be rude, but I kind of just roll my eyes. And I'm like, calm down, Hemingway. Like, this isn't that, I guess if you get coronavirus while you're there and you survive these conditions and everything, I guess that's an experience to really write about. But for the most part, I think you're just going to be locked in a room and you get to, you know, shuffle into the arena for a couple hours here and there, and then you got to shuffle back to the hotel. Like, to me, it doesn't sound like an interesting experience to have after like a couple of days. And so the idea of being there for 3 months, especially, like, I'm not necessarily afraid of me getting the coronavirus. You know, I'm lucky enough. I've got good health coverage. I'm healthy. Like, I'm in an age range where I don't have to worry too much about it. So if I got it, I wouldn't be worried about myself, but I'm worried about those around me. And so the idea of that possible exposure, like, I'm good staying at home. I'll watch it on TV and I'll write whatever I can come up with from the safety of my home here in LA.
Sounds good to me, man. Safety and you writing and me reading about the NBA are great things. So listen, Zach, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate your coverage all the way through. And
thank you.
Look forward to, like I say, having to read you write about games. That's what's important. The games are coming. So thanks for being on the pod.
Appreciate it. I'm excited to actually talk some real basketball.
My thanks to Zach Harper for joining the show. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback, presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.